Okay, I'm introducing our next speaker, Tatiana Tigrova Daly. I'm sorry if I pronounced that correctly. And she obtained her PhD in Caribbean Literature and Linguistics at the University of Puerto Rico in Rio Piedras campus and teaches literature and writing at Elizabeth City State University. Among some of her scholarly publications are those on Claude McKay, Franz Fanon, Derek Walcott, Jacques Romanow, Ralph Desbordes, and Patrick Somoyo. She is co-editor of Critical Perspectives on Caribbean Literature and Culture. So let's welcome her.
Thank you.
I'll be speaking about my book, and it's available for sale if anybody is interested. But basically, I'll just be telling you how this book came about, the research that I have done, and what it contributes to the field of Caribbean studies, and I'm telling you about different chapters of the book. Okay, so the title of the book is Claude McKay's Liberating Narrative, Russian and Anglophone Caribbean Literary Connections. And I will tell you how I first became interested and what kind of research I have done. So I first became interested in Claude McKay in the early stage of my Caribbean studies when I read his article, Soviet Russia and the Negro. As he states in the article, he couldn't be appreciated for who he was just because of his skin color. However, the Soviet Union of that time, and we're talking about 1922, 1923, offered him acceptance and appreciation that he couldn't find anywhere else. And he talks about it in his autobiography, In a Long Way From Home, that he, and talking about the differences between, he talked about the United States and England, right? So when McKay arrived to the United States, he said he was shocked, right? You know, there was racism in Jamaica, but it was kind of covered, but very direct in the United States, so he talks about it. And then he traveled to England, he traveled to Germany, and when he arrived to the Soviet Union in 1922, 1923, as he described in A Long Way From Home, it was a totally different experience for him. He said, like, for the first time in his life, and we're talking about a long time ago, right, that he said that he was appreciating for, you know, for who he was, that people didn't have to look at his skin color, but they appreciated his poetry, appreciated him as a writer. So while this article sparked my initial interest in Claude McKay, it really became a long passion that took me to Russia, the United States, and France to trace the writer's footsteps and to understand him better. My first trip was to Russia in the summer of 2003. By that time, I have read his autobiography, his first autobiography, A Long Way From Home, in which he mentions his meetings with some of the important 20th century Russian writers. When I arrived to Russia, I knew that I wanted to do my research and the archives of the writers that McKay mentioned in A Long Way From Home, and one of the writers that he mentioned is Chukovsky, is the writer that he met in Russia. So this took me to the Institute of World Literature in Moscow, the Russian Center for the Preservation and Study of Documents of Recent History, the Library of Lenin in Moscow, so it's still called, you know, 2003, it's still called Library of Lenin, Pushkin's House, St. Petersburg State University, and St. Petersburg State Library in St. Petersburg. So I have to go to all of these places, but, you know, of course, like, as you know, you don't always find what you're looking for in all of these places. So, however, I was lucky, when I was doing my research at the Institute of World Literature in Moscow, I found two entries of Chukovsky's diary, and that's the writer that McKay mentioned. So that's my contribution. So I translated the diary and included it in the book. So Chukovsky is a leading critic and an author of children's books, in which he refers to McKay's reading of his poetry in the house of Maikovsky, another important 20th century Soviet poet. I have translated these entries into English and included them in the second chapter of the book. So Chukovsky basically just describes that McKay was reading in Russian because, as Chukovsky says, that McKay was reading his poetry and he was pronouncing as a Ukrainian person. I mean, that's what, so I guess he was reading in Russian, you know? And then he was just sharing with the Russian writers about his experiences in the United States and kind of educating them about the United States of that time and African American people. Furthermore, in St. Petersburg State Library, I found articles in several newspapers and magazines that mentioned McKay and his experience in Jamaica, the United States, and Russia. I also came across the Soviet criticism of McKay's first two novels that I translated and cited in the second chapter of the publication. Basically, what I have found is the reviews of his first two novels, Home to Harlem and Banjo, and they were not favorable reviews by the Soviet critics. They were saying that McKay's novels were not revolutionary enough, which I kind of contest in my book, because when I say liberating narrative, meaning that it was liberating, it was revolutionary in the Caribbean context, they just didn't understand what he was doing. So while in Russia, I also found that McKay's papers were located at the Yale Collection of American Literature, the Beinecke Area Book and Manuscript Library, and this is where I went next. By that time, I have read Home to Harlem and Banjo and became fascinated with Ray, the Haitian protagonist of the first two novels. Even though McKay's manuscript, Group Life and Literature, in which he mentions Gorky and Dostoevsky, was the only document that related to my particular interest of the time, it was fascinating to read McKay's correspondence not only with other Harlem Renaissance writers, but also with his daughter, Hope McKay Virtue. I have included some of this correspondence in the first chapter of my publication. So I'm talking a little bit about, you know, the notes that I gave you, talking a little bit about McKay's experience, right, in the Soviet Union. So even though, like, there is a recent publication by Gary Halkin where he says that McKay, like, it's not true that McKay renounced communism. You know, in his book he says that McKay was a communist till the very end. However, you know, that, I don't know, but in the correspondence, you know, he's, and in his autobiography, McKay says that he denounced communism. However, you know, that he said that his experience in the Soviet Union was very inspirational for him in terms of his, as a writer, you know. So, and here I have a quote, like, he was called Bolshoi, and that McKay uses Russian word in Alone from Home. It's towards the end, because I'm going to skip some of these notes. But, okay, so I'll read that one. That Bolshoi, which means big in Russian. Was sweet music in my ears and an inspiration, but it also stirred up a hell of discontent with me. Why should I be big translated into Russian? I felt that if I were to be Bolshoi as a literary artist in a foreign language, I should first make a signal achievement in my native adopted language. Even though McKay enjoyed the warm personal acceptance and appreciation by the Russians, he never totally committed himself to Soviet ideology. As he wrote to James Milton Johnson in a letter dated May 8, 1935, he went to Russia as a writer and a free spirit, and he left the same. When he left Russia, he was determined to become a writer and a spokesman for his people. So, I left Russia with one determination and one objective to write. I was not received in Russia as a politician, but primarily as a Negro poet. And the tremendous reception was a great inspiration and an urge to write. I often felt in Russia that I was honored as a poet altogether out of proportion of my actual performance. And thus, I was fired with desire to accomplish the utmost. So that's what he said, that, you know, he just was so encouraged by his experience on a personal level and also on a professional level that he just wanted to write at all costs by the time he left Russia. And I have, like, a quote about Pushkin. I don't know if you're familiar at the beginning. Pushkin is a national Russian poet with the African heritage. And I have this quote by Maria Tsvetaeva at the beginning of the handout that I gave you. Is where she says that, like, she just admires black race. And she associates, you know, the talent of poetry with black race. And she refers to Pushkin's monument and admires the blackness of the monument. So if you're interested to read the quote. And when McKay, in the last quote, in the quote that I read, when McKay said that he was appreciated as a poet, right, that he said in Russia he was appreciated as a poet, And in his autobiography, he says that one of the writers that he met there gave him a photograph of Pushkin with African features, where Pushkin had curly hair. So because, you know, there are different kind of photographs. So, but that particular one, you know, with curly hair, and my kid said, and that writer said, well, here is the photograph for you, you know, of Pushkin. Al Pushkin was also a revolutionary. You know, in terms of creating Russian literature, you know, in terms of national Russian literature. So, and then McKay said that this photograph was one of the greatest treasures of his life, the photograph of Pushkin. So, and then when I was doing research at the Biomedical Collection, I found, you know, that photograph was there. So McKay has not lost the photograph. He kept it. So, and what I'm basically saying in the book is that it is liberating narrative. McKay was doing something in the Caribbean context that the Russian writers were doing in the 19th century and the native soul thinkers. So in my book, I also mentioned two critics, Del Peterson and Kate Baldwin. Del Peterson's book are from Bondage Literature of Russian and African American Soul, because when I first became interested in McKay, and I have this quote. I just read this quote, and I thought that was so interesting. You know, dreams of making something with words. So this is a quote from Home to Harlem. Andre, the Haitian protagonist, that's what he said. Dream of making something with words. What could he make in fashion? Could he ever create art? Art around which vague, incomprehensible words and phrases stone. What was art, anyway? Was it more than a clear-cut presentation of a vivid impression of life? Only the Russians of the later era seem to stand up like giants in the new. Gogol, Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Chekhov, Turgenev. When he read them now, he thought, here were the elements that the grand carnage swept over and intentionally. The soil of life saved their roots from the fire. They were so saturated, so deep down, rooted in it. So the Haitian protagonist of Home to Harlem, he reads that Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment also refers to all these Russian writers. So I became interested, like, what, you know, why was McKay interested in these Russian writers? Because, you know, Ray is interested, but obviously McKay is interested as well. So, and all these writers are native soul thinkers that also, you know, rejected these foreign ideas and principles and found beauty in their own culture, like starting with Pushkin. Like, he doesn't mention Pushkin here, but, you know, Pushkin is considered Russian national poet precisely for, you know, taking pride in the Russian culture, not imitating foreign ideas and principles. And when he says here, what is art, he's, you know, that's the same. Tolstoy has an essay that is called What is Art? And in the essay, you know, Tolstoy also refers to Pushkin, and he says that the art is something that you, something original, you know, original form of expression and not the imitation of foreign ideas and principles. So that's what McKay is asking too, you know, what is art? Like his character Ray is asking, what is art? How can I create, you know, original type of art? So, and then I was like just reading and rereading Russian literature, reading more Caribbean literature, because I was studying my PhD in Caribbean literature, like studying all of that, and seeing the similarities, like, between the two, you know, double consciousness, split protagonist, kind of, you know, great, like, the conflict between instinct and intellect, and all these themes are also present in the Russian literature, you know, so that's what the book is about, the influence of Russian literature on Claude McKay, and also the similarities between the two types of literature. And then, you know, as I was making all of the similarities, I read Dale Peterson's book, From Bondage, the Literatures of Russian and African American Soul, and it was kind of fascinating to see his analysis, because what I was, the connections that I was making between Caribbean and Russian, he makes the same connections between African American and Russian literature, even though he doesn't mention McKay, right, in that book. Then another book that was important that I also used in my book is Kate Baldwin's book, Beyond the Color Line and the Iron Curtain, Reading Encounters Between Black and Red, 1922-1963. So she does write about McKay, but she doesn't acknowledge his Caribbean background and the importance of the Soviet Union in his development of the West Indian consciousness. So in my book, I specifically focus on my kids' Jamaican background and the importance of 19th century Russian literature in his formation of a solution to his dilemma of his dual cultural identity. In the first chapter, I refer to McKay's Jamaican beginnings and world travels and argue that as McKay's international consciousness grew as a result of his travels in the United States, England, Russia, Germany, France, Spain, and Morocco, his national Jamaican consciousness also increased. As I point out, both McKay's Jamaican beginnings and international travels play an important role in his development as a writer. And thinking about international travels, like one of the most important, I think Russia was very important in that, but another important point was Africa, his experience in Morocco, and the second page of the handout. In a letter to James Wilman Johnson, McKay writes, I learned very much abroad, especially in Africa, and I'm certain that Negroes will have to realize themselves as an organized group to get anything. Wherever I traveled, I observed that the people who were getting anywhere were those who could realize the strength of their cultural groups. The political demands were considered and determined by the force of their cultural grouping. It was the same underlying principle in communist Russia and in fascist Spain and democratic France and England and in protected Africa. So what he does is Africa just helped him to realize that African-American people could not rely on white people or could not rely on communist party. So what he says is that when he comes back to the United States from Morocco, he says that they just have to organize themselves and rely upon themselves. That was his experience. But also in Africa, he wrote Banana Button, his last novel, that the setting of the novel is Jamaica. So he says that many things in Africa reminded him of his native Jamaica. So it inspired him to write that. Okay, so let me see. So in the first chapter, I talk about the Jamaican beginnings because they're important. He is one of the first Caribbean writers to write in Creole, Jamaican Creole. And he was the first one to turn to the Jamaican folk as the source of his inspiration. He expressed the everyday reality of the common people in a language created by them. Despite the wide acceptability of the British cultural standards in Jamaica of his time, McKay turns to Jamaican indigenous language and culture. So, like, even from the beginning, he started doing that. His Jamaican volumes of poetry are pioneering attempts by a Black West Indian to portray realistically the life of his people. So in the first chapter, I only briefly refer to his experience in the Soviet Union. More of that is in the second chapter. In the second chapter, I also, when I went to Russia, I kind of wanted to see not only the influence of Russian writers on McKay, but I also was hoping to see something about McKay's influence on Vanyatin, the 20th century Russian writer. And I couldn't find anything specific, so what I did is kind of just present my own analysis why McKay could possibly have influence on Vanyatin. And again, discuss similarity between Vanyatin and McKay. So, and some of these similarities is criticism of rational thinking, a void of any authentic feelings and emotions, the inner struggle between reason and instinct, the criticism of any type of social system that limits personal freedom. Okay. Let me see what else I can tell you. So, and the third chapter of dissertation is my favorite chapter, so where I finally turn to the Russian writers of the 19th century. As I point out, it's not a coincidence that Ray, fiction narrator from To Harlan, reads Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment and considers Gogol, Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Chekhov, and Turgenev to be creators of genuine art. His engagement with them from To Harlan and his subsequent internal dialogue with Tolstoy and Banjo reveal the influence of his influence on his intellectual and artistic development and on his assertion of Afro-Caribbean identity. So the Russian writers are important because in Home to Harlem, Ray asks the question, what is art, right? And he really is struggling to connect with the common people. He's considering himself alienated intellectual, which is the same in Russian literature, Crime and Punishment, Raskolnikov, alienated intellectual. And alienated intellectual represents foreign culture. Like he wants to be Napoleon right? So it deals like the French culture, right? So Sonia, another character in Crime and Punishment, that's the Russian culture, right? So he's alienated, he's struggling with that. So the same way, he's, you know, home to Harlan, he's alienated intellectual, he's like struggling to come closer to the Martins, but he's not able to. So the same in Banjo, like, he has an internal dialogue with Tolstoy, and he is fascinated with Tolstoy because he's the one that found value in peasants, but not only found value, kind of came close to the peasants. And Ray feels like he still can't come, even though he's kind of making an attempt. And they have seamen from all over the world, and he's making like a great attempt to connect with the common folk, still not able to. And then only in the third novel, Banana Bottom, which has a totally different name and totally different protagonist, Vita Plath, we don't have this internal struggle anymore. We have this greater integration with the local culture and preference for the local culture, you know, and not the British culture. So in Home to Harlem and Banjo, the Russian writers of the 19th century are central influences in race in a drama. Similar to those different individuals who enter Raskolnikov's inner speech and a symbol of certain orientation to life and an ideological position, the symbol of a specific real-life situation to those same ideological questions that are meant here. They exemplify a type of art that Ray would like to create. So, let me see. The Ferdinand nobleman desires to come closer to the masses and becomes creatively active in the Russian literature of the 19th century. Mackay Ray also gains strength through contact with the cultural treasure of Africa and with ordinary black folk. However, like Dostoevsky Raskolnikov, who finally rejects the Napoleonic type of thinking and returns to his national sentiments embedded in Russian Orthodox Church, because finally he kind of comes to realization of the importance of our faith. Because that was an important theme in Russian native soul thinkers like Dostoevsky and Tolstoy, that the beauty of the Russian culture is the Russian Orthodox Church. And this is a representation of Sonia. The Russian Orthodox Church is represented through Sonia. And then Raskolnikov like struggles with her throughout the novel, but at the end he comes to repentance, right? So, unlike the first Raskolnikov, Ray cannot fully reject Western education in defining his Afro-Caribbean identity. He understands the contradiction between intellect and instinct, but he doesn't want to forsake either one of them. While his contact with the black community in Banjo brings him closer to his African-based roots, he's unable to undergo a complete change. In Banana Bottom, Mackay's final novel, he further develops ideas first initiated in Home to Harlem and Banjo. Vita Plath, the protagonist of the third novel, continues the search for a particular Afro-Caribbean identity, started by Ray within North American and French telling, and completed in an authentic Jamaican environment. If in the first novel, Ray's engagement in a scientific dialogue with the Russian writers leads simply to a discussion of the importance of the African heritage within a Caribbean identity, in Banana Bottom there is an actual integration of an educated colonial with the common Jamaican people and the Upper Jamaican culture that they represent. The heroine uprooting from the nurturing Upper Jamaican soil leads to her more fervent attachment to cultural and spiritual values. So Vita feels like, you know, she was educated in England, but she says because she was uprooted from her culture, when she comes back, she just loves it even more. And she wants to be more a part of her culture. So we see clearly this preference for the native Jamaican culture. So in some of the common themes that I analyzed in the book between the Russian literature and the Caribbean literature, I also mentioned in the fourth chapter, C.L.R. James and Alde Bastir, two Trinidadian writers who were also influenced by the Russian literature. So now I have analyzed them and also their similarity with Mackay. And another part of the book is kind of similarities in general between Russian literature and Caribbean literature, Anglo-Caribbean. So some of the similarities is cultural dualism that I talked about, like, okay, I don't know what I am. Am I this? Am I that? You know, how... So cultural dualism, a deep appreciation of lower classes, that is in Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and the Caribbean, Caribbean writers that I mentioned in the book. Criticism of the middle class for imitating foreign ideas and principles and desire to come closer to the common people. I important issues and concerns that McKay shares with Stella James and Ralph de Bastille, his Trinidadian contemporaries, also influenced by the Russian literature of the 19th century. In the last chapter, I argue that Claude McKay deserves respect and admiration because of the value and importance of his work, rather than the reason that he was, and I'm just quoting, that rare thing, a literate Negro, and only secondly because of the merit of his work. That's one of the critics that guilts, which is, I don't agree with. I hope my study can be used as a paradigm for further analysis of both Russian literary reception in the Anglophone Caribbean context and similar themes and concerns that are present in these two distinct yet similar types of writing. That's it. I don't know if you read this quote by Tsvetaeva. I thought that was so interesting. She's talking about the monument of Pushkin, right? The third one. And she says, from the Pushkin monument, I also got my mad love for black people carried through a whole lifetime. To this day, I feel the engulfment of my whole being when by chance in a streetcar or some other vehicle, I find myself with a black person next to me. My white beard is side by side with black deity. In every Negro, I love Pushkin and recognize Pushkin, the black Pushkin monument of my illiterate childhood and of all Russia. When I read this, I thought it was very interesting. And the connection I made is that maybe that's why McKay was appreciated in Russia, the black poet.
One of the things that this brings in, even as one of the first, both of the people who comment on your book, mm-hmm. talk about this new and first perspective of this kind to Claude McKay's work. And I thought how fascinating this is, because this is a period of time when African Americans in the whole were going out to different cultures and connecting. We start with Frederick Douglass, with his Irish connection. And of course, the notable one there is Richard Wright, at a time when, the whole McCarthyism was moving in the U.S. and a number of African Americans were associated or accused of association with communism in those days. The red was a bad word in the U.S. And many of them fled to France. Richard Wright wrote at that time that there is more more freedom or more racism? There is more racism in one block of the United States of America than in the whole of France. And of course, the French love that, And I think now learning about Claude McKay's, connection with Russia, they found some kind of connection with these other groups or cultures of people. And so my question would be, is there any kind of Claude McKay association in Russia? Because in both these other cases that I use, in Richard Wright's case, not only in France, but also in Japan, they have a Richard Wright Association, that hold conferences and so on because of this common struggle.
Not that much because they wrote a lot about him, during 1922, 1923 in the newspapers, but since he denied communism, and then, and he's popular because the Negroes in America, he actually wrote when he was in Russia, and that was a forgotten publication that only 1960, it got translated from Russian into English. Nobody agrees, and it's about the life of African American people. But they got disappointed with him because they wanted him to write in a certain way, to kind of to promote solidarity or communist ideas. You know, that's why they said that a bunch of characters, like the Soviet Review, said that they were like not they're not strong revolutionary characters that they wanted to see. But what I argue in my book that within the Caribbean context, yes, you know, they are, you know, he's doing something, he's creating Caribbean literature.